Welcome to Tales of the Lesser Medium, a podcast that pokes fun at video game narratives. Each season, me, Caleb J. Ross, and my co-host, Travis Terry, take you through our favorite video game franchise narratives, taking time along the way for humorous skits to make you laugh and to make you fall in love with our childish wonder for life. Hey, Travis, can you give me a quick childish wonder giggle laugh? Oh, it's adorable. See, that's the kind of stuff you can expect, listener.
Yeah.
This is episode 4 of 4 in our Tomb Raider series. That's series 2 of Tales of the Lesser Medium. We're glad you're here.
Yeah.
The previous installments have taken us all around the globe in an effort to save the world. In the first Tomb Raider, Lara stopped Jacqueline Nautla's attempt at steering human evolution in an evil direction. In the second game, Lara took down a cult whose leader planned to transform himself into a dragon in pursuit of world domination. In the previous episode detailing Tomb Raider 3, Lara jumped between almost every continent in search of extremely powerful artifacts that again held the key to taking human evolution into a sinister direction. In this episode, we venture into Lara's past as well as her present. The story centers on the awakening of an Egyptian god who is at odds with mankind.
Ooh.
And something evil and probably evolution.
Yeah, every time. Egyptian gods also who really know how to create a complicated key puzzle, then hide those keys behind easily movable tiled blocks.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that there's an entire religious mythos built around carpentry. I mean, that's Christianity, so it kind of makes sense, right?
That's actually a really good point. I will say, though, at this point in time, I am very sick of Tomb Raider. I cannot wait to get this episode over with. I think it'll be fun, but holy crap, if I see another sandstone-colored block get pushed, I will throw up.
Well, good news, because season 3 is the Tomb Raider reboot series.
And it is not. And it is not.
There's no pushing stone or sand tablets or sand blocks in that one.
It will not happen. No.
All right. Unless there's a swell of support from the listeners, right?
No. Boo.
As Egyptian legend goes, Horus, the son of light, outwitted the evil god Set, sometimes called Seth and sometimes Samarakhet, but we'll just say Set because it's easier, and imprisoned him in a secret tomb. 5,000 years later, Lara Croft goes strolling by and finds the lost tomb, but unwittingly unleashes Set from his prison. There was an ancient prophecy that suggested this very thing would happen, and it also says that Set will, quote, plunge mankind into darkness, unquote, upon his return. We'll be with Lara in her race against time to put Set away once again and prevent the end of the world.
All right.
Oh, you know what? I think that's where Ron Papil's Forget Set tagline comes from, right?
Yeah. Wait, it's Set and Forget. Come on, Caleb. You know better.
Putting Set away will be messy, though. Throughout her adventure, Lara also has to remain constantly aware of her mentor come arch-rival, Werner von Kroy. Let's settle into Tomb Raider 4, The Last Revelation.
Thank God.
The game opens up with a 14-year-old Lara accompanying Werner von Kroy on an expedition. At this time, Werner von Kroy is Lara's mentor. This serves as the game's tutorial while also setting the stage for the game's narrative. Lara and Werner are inside Angkor Wat, an actual ancient Buddhist temple complex built in the 12th century that is the largest religious monument in the world. Van Kroy has brought Lara along on this trek where he's searching for an artifact known as the Iris. Here we see what Lara was like as a teenager. This is after her mother died and during a period of time where her timeline is a bit fragmented. She comes across as playful and curious, as you'd expect a girl her age to be, and it's apparent that von Kroy has parlayed his knowledge of artifact hunting onto her by this time. He picks at her and prods her, often gloating that her naive input is that of a teenager. After all, he is the world-renowned archaeologist, not her. It seems playful, but clearly gets under Lara's skin.
Kind of sounds to me like von Kroy is low on self-confidence and just wants to bully Lara to make himself feel better.
Yeah, he's bragging about being smarter than a teenager, and not just like with general knowledge, but with very specific knowledge that, of course, only a grown adult would ever even begin to grasp. And it makes me wonder if he treats every kid this way, right? So,
bing bong.
what do we have here? Who's this?
Trick or treat! I'm a cowboy.
No, clearly you're not a cowboy. Cowboys, they carry pistols in their holsters. What you have there looks like a piece of plastic.
I couldn't have a real gun. My mommy said I can't have a real gun again, not after the event.
Well, I'm not very tricked if it's not real. Where's the trick? You want a treat? Hey, what about you? Are you supposed to be a Power Ranger? You know, during Wild Force, they had badges with animals on the lapels. Oh, you're a crying Power Ranger now? That's pretty legit.
Ever since Daddy died and Mommy said we can't afford costumes, I had to make this one out of Dad's old clothes.
So you're just parading around as your dead father. Well, fine. Fine, here, have some candy. You children are awfully dumb. I'm very smart. Get out of here.
Bye. Okay, bye. Thank you, old, creepy old man.
I guess that kid actually ended up being more of a zombie than a Power Ranger, dressing up in his dead father's clothes. Oh, so sad. Finally, they come to the artifact Von Croy is searching for. Each pulling a lever to operate an ancient mechanism, a globe opens like a flower, and in the center rests the iris. Von Croy makes a move to grab it, but at that moment the ceiling begins to collapse. Lara flees, believing Von Croy has done the same, but upon hearing a scream, she realizes he's fallen backwards and is dangling off the edge of the pedestal where the glove rests. He can't free himself. Lara realizes she cannot go back and save him. She yells, "Father!" as the globe reforms around him, making it clear that he's more than just a mentor and her apprentice. To be clear, Von Croy is not really her father, but he's as important, at least to Lara. It's unclear if the globe smashes him or conceals him safely inside. Lara barely makes it out of there alive and does not know the fate of her friend.
Well, spoiler alert. He's fine, but it's sad right now because Von Croy, as you said, is seen as her mentor and protector despite being a little bit of a jerk. But later you'll find out he's a whole lot of bit of a jerk, and him dangling by his pant leg on this mechanical flower closing in is funny as hell. I recommend anybody going to watch that scene. It's like a turtle getting trapped in a closet door or something. I mean, turtles are cute, but this one in particular, not so much. But it's fun.
All of that took place in 1984. Now, fast forward to 1999, and a year after the events of Tomb Raider 3.
And a great time to be alive, too. You had Limp Bizkit bopping in there, you know, Y2K's just around the corner. Just a good time. Just a good time.
Lara is riding a camel and riding a white top sabot, making her difficult to recognize. She's moving slowly through an Egyptian desert alongside her guide.
Hello, Lara.
Oh, Greg, I can't wait.
They reach a rock formation in the middle of the windy desert, and Lara dismounts to approach a shining object on the ground. As she bends down to inspect the object, she is distracted by her guide, trying to get her attention. While distracted, a scorpion emerges near her hand. She turns her attention back toward the rock, sees the scorpion, becomes startled, and falls backward. At this point, dozens of smaller scorpions rush out from the cracks of the rock formation, and she runs back to the guide to show him the object she found.
You know, no big old no thanks for me. Give me Atlantean hell horses, fire-breathing pterodactyls, or even the occasional cobra. Scorpions spewing from under a rock is a big old huge nope out of old Trav. Nope.
They remove some sand from around the formation and realize it's a statue of a figure lying on its back with a pressure plate at the top. She crawls up to press down on the plate and looks around to see what has happened. Moments later, the earth begins to shake, rocks come loose from a nearby cliff, and a plume of sand bursts from the ground, obstructing all visibility. The ground they're standing on opens up, and Lara and the guide plummet down a man-made hole that twists and turns until it spits her out at the bottom, where she lands with a hard thud. Dramatically, she rips off her desert garb, revealing her usual adventurer's outfit. The guard is nearby and climbs to his feet and lights a torch for them to see. This is exactly where they wanted to be, near the entrance of the Tomb of Seth, or alternatively, Set.
Poor Greg, watching Lara rip off that desert garb and then just finds out she's still clothed. He's like,
Do you think in the last episode when he watched her like change bathing suits or change into a bathing suit that she also had her full adventurer's outfit underneath that?
Yeah.
He thought maybe this would be the time.
Yeah.
Wolves lurk around down here somehow. Luckily, Lara hasn't forgotten how to kill since we last saw her. Small scorpions also mull about, occasionally giving Lara fits in tight spaces. Her current confines are cave-like, but she's looking for an ancient Egyptian tomb she can access somewhere down here. The place is laden with traps, so naturally, Lara knows she's on the right path. The guide is also along for the ride, wandering around the maze of corridors himself and somewhat keeping Lara on the right path.
And at this point, you gotta kind of wonder how Greg can even stand to be wearing anything but a thick pair of breeches around Lara. Poor horny old fuck.
After climbing a few steep walls and even figuring out a hieroglyphic floor tile puzzle, she locates an hourglass to place in a statue that lets sand fall from the ceiling that raises the floor for her to reach an opening that will take her into the burial chambers. Yes, it's the same old tomb stuff Laura's used to by now. Of note, at one point the guide, while holding a torch, becomes startled by something and just nopes right out of the place altogether. Finally, Lara reaches the burial chamber where Set's tomb rests in the middle. She climbs up on top of the tomb and rips an artifact from the chest of its contained remains and nonchalantly hops back down to leave. Meanwhile, the chest emanates a beam of yellow light straight up to the ceiling, but Lara doesn't seem to notice or care. To exit the tomb, she needs to solve a few puzzles, with one resulting in the reanimation of a few mummies who stagger toward her.
Man, does she really think she could just, you know, walk in, grab the thing, and then, like, walk out with the thing? Like, has she not played a Tomb Raider?
Maybe she thinks she's just good enough now, you know?
Yeah. I just walk in, I get it, I walk out. That's what I do. I'm Lara.
Oi. Fearing that shooting the mummies could be a waste of ammo, she decides to avoid them and move on. Acrobatically, she has to outrun falling ceiling spikes again and leap over areas where razor-sharp blades await her fall. Dobermans are everywhere, perhaps an homage to the visual representation of Set, who dons a dog mask with pointy ears. Once back outside, Lara kneels on the ground and pulls the artifact, which is an amulet, from her pouch. She reads the inscription aloud, and simultaneously the cutscene shows that in the underworld the voice of Set reads along. Lara doesn't realize that she's releasing Set from his once eternal slumber as she speaks. She reads,
I, Semirket, High Priest of Horus, for...
Jesus Christ. Gotta quit smoking dick.
I, Semirket, High Priest of Horus, forewarn that he who removes the amulet shall have released Set. He who walked abroad with the jackal at the dawn of man shall once again violate the earth. Set, ruler of evil, will again be free at the turn of distant millennia. At his heel, plagues and locust harvest fell under the broken skies.
Just a second, I gotta clean up all this urine in my chair. As she finishes speaking, she doesn't realize that her companion and guide in the desert has snuck upon her. As she is still kneeling, he pulls a revolver to her temple, cocks it, and tells her to hand it over.
Greg, I thought we had something special.
Calmly, Lara continues reading.
No, Lara, the lesson here is to just please stop reading things. Things are going bad. But she does, and she reads, Set also,
once called forth shall the heavens split asunder, and the light of the sun god Horus banish the lord of darkness. Set.
Dang it, more urine. Gosh, dang it. Just 1 second. Mop that up. At that moment, lightning strikes the nearby exit to the temple Lara just came from and sends rocks and dust scattering everywhere, giving Lara a chance to flee.
Well, that didn't go the way I thought it would.
She finally is allowed to just leave. That's great. As the dust settles, the guide looks around for his revolver on the ground nearby, but the tables have turned. Lara stands behind him, both of her pistols aimed at him, and says, I wouldn't advise it. A jeep arrives nearby and kicks up a cloud of dust that allows the guide to escape this time. Lara gives chase toward the Valley of Kings. It is an area of Egypt enclosed in a bend of the Nile. It houses the royal necropolis and the sites of the tomb of many of Egypt's pharaohs. These were built after the practice of building pyramids in the Old Kingdom period became less fashionable, and more importantly was regarded as less able to deter grave robbers. As she makes her way through, she's greeted by hostile warriors who wear desert garb, covering their head and face and wield swords and uzis. Lara shoots them as she sees them and keeps searching for the guide. She still possesses the amulet, so it's not clear why she wants the guide dead so badly.
Interesting.
Yeah. Eventually, the guide nonchalantly walks to his jeep while Laura is fighting through baddies looking for him. Realizing this, she runs to a nearby jeep and steals it, chasing him through the weaving desert cave tunnels and rocky valleys. When she gets close behind him, he launches a grenade out the window at her, so she has to stay vigilant in dodging those. The chase is harrowing, with each vehicle traversing over thin rocky formations that serve as bridges over large gorges. One bump off the road or a simple miscalculation of a curve will result in a plummet to a fiery death. The area is also littered with several desert warriors who are standing in the way attempting to fire on Laura's jeep, but she just gasses her jeep toward them and runs them over with hardly a second thought. As she goes, she has to routinely leave the jeep at dead ends to find switches that open gates for her to pass through, making you wonder how the guide made it through. But even if he had help in closing the gates behind him, he's never too far ahead of Laura, giving the illusion that maybe he's not running from her, but in fact leading her somewhere. You know, like a guide.
So now you think Greg's doing safari tours? That's great.
In the next cutscene, we see Laura's jeep go airborne over a sand dune. At the peak of her radical jump, she's able to see the guide boarding a barge on the Nile. Between her and the barge, a number of armed men take cover behind their vehicles. She speeds ahead and fires on some of the men from the window of the jeep with her pistol, taking out a few. One man pulls out a grenade launcher to fire toward Laura, but she manages to dodge it as she ramps the lip of a dune and sails over the water to land on the barge. As she lands and skids to a halt, a scared little pig and a frantic chicken go scurrying across the deck.
Aw, poor little piggy and chicky. You gotta wonder what's going through their poor little heads, you know.
I tell you what, being on a barge is not too bad. I being a dirty pig and whatnot, this hobo lifestyle's kind of good for me.
I agree. You know my favorite part about this?
What's that, Chicky?
It's calm. There's nothing to worry about. There's no surprises. There's nothing that just kind of jumps out and scares you. It's smooth sailing. I love it.
I see a car coming.
What's a car?
I don't know. We're on a barge. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, the first time someone asked me if I was born in a barn, I thought they said barge, and I said no, and they thought I was just some kind of fancy chicken who wasn't born in a barn, but here I am on a barge. It is crazy how things work out. Oh my God, what's that? Oh yeah, I just realized I said what's that, but you already declared it was a car.
You're a very stupid chicken. Also, my wife thinks I'm into some kinky pig sex down here, so we have to tread forward with that on my mind.
Back on land, the cutscene continues. A late 50s model's car pulls up, and a tall, well-dressed man steps out. Looking at the men on the ground, suffering from bullet wounds and severe burns, he pokes at them by suggesting Croft must have outsmarted them, and they let her escape. A man replies that the amulet Laura has speaks of the priest, Samarakhet or Set, something of meaning to the well-dressed man who the others greeted upon arrival as Von Croy.
Oh, sorry, I just dropped my pen.
Wait, did you say Von Croy?
Von Croy, indeed, oh, I said, my. Yes.
You wonder if why he has to take a 50s model car across the the desert. You think he's talking to those guys? He's like,
bummer, looks like Laura got away. Hey, guy. You're one of my goons there. Hey, what do you think? Uh-huh. Go back there. See that jet black car back there? What do you think about that Series 63 Cadillac back there? Huh? It's similar to the 61. It's available in sedan only, rode with the same wheelbase. What do you think about that? You into cars there, boy?
Yes, sir. I love cars. I love them. I had a 1963 Cadillac once. That was a fun car. I drove it around. Oh, I did so much driving in that.
That sounds like an import. But listen here, a lot of people tell me, they say, listen, Varner, you have this old Cadillac. You're driving it through the desert. You're going to fuck it up. You're going to get a lot of sand there in the intake. And I tell them, I say, fuck you.
Yeah.
My 63, it's very good. It's very good in the desert.
They know nothing about sand like you and I, fellow car enthusiasts, know about sand and intakes. Oh, gosh. And outtakes? Have you seen the newest models?
Oh, I have, yes. They have that notchback design derived from that fastback B-body, but described as an A-body, like, oh, it turns me right on. But you boys out here riding in the sand with your stupid jeeps.
Huh. Yeah. No disrespect, sir, but can we go back to killing Lara Croft? Or attempting to, I suppose.
Good idea. Sorry, I got sidetracked.
Laura exits the barge near the city of Alexandria, and we watch as her jeep pulls up to a house somewhere in a rural desert area. She gets out and walks inside to be greeted by a longtime friend, Jean Yves. Mm-hmm. Jean is a French archaeologist and historian, and quickly surmises that Laura is not there for a social visit. Probably all the blood and scrapes and stuff on her on her person.
That's a good point.
Laura shows him the Amulet of Horus, and Jean reads from some torn ancient writings that he's compiled that basically say the artifact will release Set, who is considered the bringer of plagues, and has a ceaseless wrath that will destroy all lands. Laura looks on, suddenly nervous. Jean tells her that she will need the armor of Horus, buried in a tomb somewhere in Alexandria, to defeat Set.
You never want to invite the bringer of plagues to anything. It's like, damn it, Leon, we said finger foods only. Now we're going to have all these plagues left over after the Super Bowl. Doggone it.
Jean comforts Laura, who he can tell is overcome with regret for reawakening Set. How could you have known? He asks, despite reading a torn manuscript that was right there on his table, detailing exactly how Set is awakened and how to defeat him. She knows she has to put things right and defeat Set and throw Von Croy off the track, who she supposes wants the armor of Horus for himself as a prized artifact and possession.
I do love how he's letting her down softly here. He's looking right here at this thing he already has out on his coffee table that he's probably been poring over for months and studying. And she walks in, tells him she messed up and awakened Set. And Jean just like immediately just knocks the scroll into the trash can. He's like, you know, literally no way you could have known. You know, that precise information, it's never been written down or recorded or conveyed or communicated or known by anyone else ever. Absolutely no one. Not even a best friend. You couldn't have asked anybody about it first before you went and did all that stuff. Don't worry about it, Laura. It's fine. I'm just going to set fire to what I just put in the trash can, though. Do not worry. Do you need a Band-Aid? You look rough.
Oh, I'm all out of Band-Aids, but here's this scroll piece left over. If you just want to wrap that around your arm, that'll be fine. Next, we see Laura speeding toward an Egyptian sphinx in the middle of the desert in her jeep. Eventually, she arrives at the Temple of Karnak, where the tomb of Samarakhet awaits inside. There's nothing here that Laura hasn't encountered before. A confusing layout with plenty of puzzles to solve, the occasional underwater section, and plenty of pesky scorpions skittering around most corners.
No thanks.
Outside, Laura has company. Von Croy pulls up alongside two other jeeps. Three armed desert warriors that Laura encountered earlier step out, and at Von Croy's command, they run toward the Temple of Karnak. Laura, however, doesn't know they're here. In the meantime, she's venturing through what is known as the Sacred Lake, a real-life location common to Egyptian temple complexes where pools existed for cleansing worshippers. For now, it's inhabited by several large crocodiles Laura must kill in order to continue solving the many puzzles and riddles that prevent her access to the tomb.
So if there are crocodiles hanging out at a place called the Sacred Lake, would they be very violent?
That's a good question. A sacred lake sounds more to me like a place where people with like debilitating anxiety, they go for therapy, right?
So it'd be like, what brings you in for therapy today, fellow crocodile? What's bothering you?
Well, a lot of things. Breakfast wasn't very good.
What'd you have?
I had a squirrel.
A squirrel?
I'm trying to be vegetarian. So yeah. I ate a vegetarian squirrel.
Yeah.
And it
very
was
nutty.
Okay. Very, yeah, you know what? You get me. Oh, man, we should hang out after therapy sometime. What do you think?
Nope, we cannot.
Okay, well, that kind of rejection is what brought me to therapy to begin with, so I appreciate you maintaining that. But you know what? Okay, so something did happen. Mm-hmm. I was hanging out, bathing, and there was this bipedal creature of some sort that just started shooting little stingers at me. Do you know what this is about?
No, good Lord, no. Where were you?
I was under the bridge.
You're under the bridge
that literally nothing has ever walked across since the beginning of time.
No, the bipeds use that to go across so that we don't eat them. You were over there. No wonder. You were on their land.
Yeah. Well, it's called Sacred Lake, you son of a bitch. Of course I was over there.
Yeah, that was a good point.
Yeah. Rename your places. Okay. I just farted. I'm out.
Wow. That's interesting. I hate when people come in here to talk to me and then they just fart and leave. It is the worst. Oh, I just farted. I got to go too. Oh, my God. Okay.
We're really bad at this. Okay. I'm very bad at this.
I like how when crocodiles fart, that means got to go. Bubbles in the water. Can't let anybody know it was me.
She finally reaches the tomb entrance and places the amulet of Horus into the recesses clearly made to fit this amulet. This causes a giant door to open upward slowly. She steps in. The tomb is outside, not down underground like she had thought, but hidden enough to make it difficult for her to find. The desert sun blisters from above, reflecting off the sand to make a bright white glow that makes it difficult for her or anyone to see through. She steps into the darkness. Her eyes adjust, and she hears a noise, a growl. She can't clearly make out what's in front of her, but it appears to be something with glowing red eyes, angry eyes. At that moment, she hears someone walk up behind her and call out, "Miss Croft!" She spins around, recognizing the voice. "Von Croy?" she says in return.
"Von Croy.
You sound concerned, my dear. Have you misplaced something?"
"Nothing I shan't be retrieving at a later date, lieber."
"You know how I admire your perseverance, but I fear this time we may be testing it to the, how would you say, maxim."
"Always griping, Werner. If it's the leg causing all this resentment, I seem to remember that being down to your affinity with pulling hazardous levers."
"Enough of this tedious banter, Miss Croft. It is time for you to realize..."
At this point, she cocks her gun. Von Croy hears the gun cock and peeks around the corner to take her down, but she fires on him anyway. He says, "Let's review your sprinting skills," and pulls the amulet from the door's recesses. The contraption that caused it to open, now removed, is causing it to close, leaving Lara in the dark. She sprints toward the opening as the white light beaming through slowly diminishes. She's not fast enough. She's now trapped in the tomb with the glowing red eyes that are now somewhere in the dark behind her. Von Croy now has the amulet, and looking on after trapping Lara to her most certain death, he imagines the dark powers he can now wield.
Welp, let's hope it doesn't work like he's thinking it will.
Yeah, and maybe it doesn't work at all, like, right? Maybe he'll have to get it replaced once he's back in sort of Western society, and there aren't really many options for that. In fact, I can only think of maybe like a strip mall cell phone repair store.
"Hi, welcome to Sunnyvale Mall."
Yes. So this kiosk here, I have a mobile device here. I think it's actually called an amulet. It's not getting
amulet.
It's not getting signal. Do you guys do any repairs or anything like this?
Well, let me ask, is it running Android Lollipop version 10.0 through 10.3, or is it one of those Apple devices? Which one is it?
Well, as you can see...
Hurry up, come on. I don't have all day. I have a date with the girl who works at the Auntie May's pretzel place. I don't know the name of it. I just know her name, and I think it's, I want to say Sally.
Those are good pretzels. I will say that, but... no, I don't. I don't actually know. I think it's. What's happening is when I try to power it on, it just kind of goes through like a cycle, and I'm not able to get like any signal on it. And I don't know if it. Is there anything?
Have you
guys
checked the reverse viscosity for the see-through USB AB input valve? Have you?
I have no.
Let me guess. No,
I have
you
no
haven't.
Idea what you're talking about. I am very old. I'm a very old archaeologist. The most technology I have is a 1963 Oldsmobile. Which is better than the Series 62 Buick Roadmaster. The whole platform is just great.
Oh,
I just love...
I didn't know I was dealing with a car guy.
Oh, yeah, give me that amulet. I'll fix it up here for you in like 10 seconds.
Oh, this guy rules.
With no option,
Laura Turk. What is the name of that place? Anti-Mare?
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was funny that you stumbled over it, though. I'm going to keep that. It was funny.
There is an actual place.
I know what you mean. Okay. I don't think anybody knows the name of it. They say, let's go get a pretzel, and they walk up and get in line at that place that smells like a pretzel.
I'm going to open up a place right next to it that sells just individual pretzels from that you buy in like a grocery store in bags. Like, there's just a stale, like, like individual tiny little pretzels.
Yeah.
They're going to be a nickel apiece.
There you go.
And I'm going to make a fortune.
You might.
With no option, Laura turns to venture further inside the tomb and is immediately greeted by an arachnophobe's worst nightmare, a giant swarm of tiny spiders. Thinking fast, she jumps and uses a crossbeam overhead to scale across like monkey bars to avoid touching her feet to the floor where they skitter. Unaware, apparently, that spiders, one of their notorious features is crawling up walls and on ceilings to get to hard to reach places, but
hey, it's a big
whatever.
Room. It's a big room.
Sure. I'll let it slide. She eventually learns that these pesky critters are attracted to the light of her torch, so she cleverly places it in certain spots to lure them away while she searches for the necessary keys and treasures that help Laura progress in the Tomb Raider world. The Tomb of Samarakhet contains more obscure riddles than deadly enemies, though, including a rudimentary version of chess, which wasn't invented until long after the Tomb of Samarakhet was believed to have been constructed.
I like to think there was a wave of riddle makers that used to move into abandoned structures at some point in history, like those Halloween costume superstores that always take up shop and abandon Joanne's Fabrics. All right, so let me get this straight. You want to install a chess game, okay? Uh-huh. You want it to be about what I'm seeing here just from my eyeballs, 62 mm-hmm. meters across. You want it to be a regular standard chess board with human-sized pieces in it. And you want it to fit in this ancient-ass room with no ventilation?
Yes, no ventilation at all. Ha ha ha. But I do need power, so there will have to, unfortunately, be a breaker box. Are you an electrician, by chance, also, in addition to a contractor?
Of course, I can do everything, but man, the problem here is going to be you're not going to be able to get this. This ain't going to be up to code at all. We have support beams that have been taken out, or maybe were never here because support beams didn't exist, you know, 30,000 years ago when this was made.
Exactly. Checkmate, as the saying would go, and is appropriate here. So I need you to continue building. If you could disregard all safety protocols and make this giant chessboard with human-sized pieces, of course. And I need the floor to be like a linoleum kind of thing so that the chess pieces can slide a bit easier. Buddy, do you think you could maybe do that for me?
Buddy, I am a licensed contractor. I have a real good reputation. If you listen to the last episode, I am on the money. I am on the money. I can set you up a security thing that'll spot a fucking T-Rex from a mile away, man. I am not going to get involved. Actually, I'm going to leave right now. I can't even, I should report you for this.
Before you go, my dryer, my clothes dryer is clicking. Can you check that out?
Yeah, where's it at?
It's all right. Come on, down the hall.
Anything for money, those contractors. I'm charged by the hour. Whatever you want me to look at your asshole, I'll look at it, man. Whatever you need. I don't have to, as long as I don't have to build nothing around you.
Eventually, inside a dark crypt, we see Laura shine her flashlight along the walls in an attempt to decipher the hieroglyphics. She begins reading Set's words.
For I have served the god of light, Horus, at the time of plagues. To read this inscription means that the ruler of
darkness is free. Set is released to walk abroad amongst the mortals, enlisting his armies of the night to serve him. He who removes the amulet and releases the dark power of Set shall summon the sun god Horus, for only the power of light will again imprison him.
The voice goes on to describe that Laura will need to go to the Aegis Pyramid to get the armor of Horus. A door then opens for Laura to pass through. Inside, she finds a mini diorama of Egypt with the Sphinx and the Great Pyramids represented. Laura activates a switch on the wall that initiates a ceiling contraption that beams a golden laser onto the diorama and makes its way to a pyramid
that it zaps to pieces, uncovering a small key underneath.
Yeah, what was that papier-mâché looking diorama made out of? Obviously, if it's maybe not papier-mâché, but you need to activate a ceiling laser to break it open to take the key. I mean, just fucking shoot it, Lara. You have grenade launchers. You have all kinds of... You don't need to fiddle with this shit to break stuff open. But I am giving the devs props for finding a new fun way to open a door in the series, though. I'm pretty sick of levers, to be quite honest.
Oh, there'll be plenty more this episode. Don't you worry. Shortly after that, things get a little more interesting. In order to advance through certain doors, Lara needs a little help from... a thing called a Sphinx Bull.
Hmm.
The Sphinx Bull is based on a real Egyptian idol and a god worshipped in Memphis, not where Elvis is from, the one in Egypt.
Yeah.
The U.S. Memphis can only have one king, and I think we know who that is. The Sphinx Bull is a shiny bull-like statue that wears a horned headdress. When moving, it emulates bull-like behavior, charging and sometimes smashing through doors. When Lara needs the bull to open a door, she can wait for the bull to charge and then acrobatically flip out of the way at the last second. The bull doesn't stop charging, though, so while Lara figures out where to go, the Sphinx Bull stalks her relentlessly, its heavy footfalls echoing on the stone floor behind her.
Ooh, you ain't nothing but a Sphinx Bull. Oh, I'm charging all the time.
You like that?
I loved it.
That's the real king.
after puzzle, near-death experience after near-death experience, Lara makes it to an area where she can see natural light entering through the wall. She squeezes through to arrive at a cliff-like protrusion, but is caught off guard by the presence of a person sitting at the edge of the cliff. Lara sneaks, the sun blinding her view until she can determine that the man sitting there is the guide who betrayed her earlier.
Ooh.
She points a gun at him and tells him to take her to Werner von Kroy.
Ooh.
Which is strange, because that means she still trusts this fake guide to be a real guide. Dumb move, Lara.
Lara. He's kind of a Senator Palpatine feel now for me.
It's true. A helicopter is seen flying away from the ground below. A helicopter that supposedly carries Von Kroy. Below are more people milling about, possibly Von Kroy's outpost of goons. She asks the guide where Von Kroy's helicopter is heading. To Alexandria, he says. Lara doesn't even say thanks and hits the man over the head, knocking him out cold where he sits. She steals his robes and infiltrates the outpost, boarding the nearby train undetected.
A little rude, but a step down from murder, I guess.
Right, he's gonna wake up with so many questions.
Lara?
The next, not fair, you saw me naked. The next scene flashes to the guide who has woken in the cave. Remember earlier when Von Kroy locked Lara in the tomb and the beastly red eyes were seen in the dark and we never mentioned them again? Well, the guide strikes a match and sees those same eyes staring back at him, but he does not get the same pass that Lara got and is mauled on the spot.
Oh, man, brief moment of silence for our dear friend, Greg, please. Caleb, please.
What? Oh, sorry. Is that brief enough?
Okay, I think that's good.
Okay, good. Moments later, the train is set in motion, and as it speeds through the desert, Lara makes her way through the train cars armed with a shotgun, searching for more ammo and health. It's not long before Von Kroy's sword and psi-wielding mercenaries learn of her presence and seek to kill her. She dispatches a few with a shotgun, even making her way to the roof of the moving train and blasting a few soldiers off the sides. Turns out, they're no match for her shotgun.
You know, word had to have been getting around that Lara murders everyone using an arsenal of guns that would make, you know, Robert Kendo from Resident Evil harder than a diamond, right?
Well, resources are scarce in the desert.
I mean, how did they just convince these guys it's a good idea? Like, you know, we learned from the last episode, she'll shoot an unarmed man. You know, she doesn't, there's no sportsmanship with her. She'll kill whoever. I don't know how they got those guys to go with just swords. Doesn't seem right.
Yeah, this must have been a very convincing quartermaster handing out all of the weapons, I think.
Yeah.
All right, men. Listen up. Everybody get in line. We're going to be handing out our weapons for today's mission, which is, let me open it up here, kill the lady. We're going to be killing the lady. We don't have any other intel. We don't know if she's armed or not. We're going to be killing a lady. So everybody's in line.
Almost. I'm here reporting for duty, but I am missing my firearm, sir.
Nah, we're just handing out swords and scythes today, comrade. Sorry about that.
Oh, well, you know, I appreciate the, all due offense, you know, I appreciate the trust in us to be able to handle this using just swords and scythes and probably nunchucks, I'm guessing, are in there somewhere.
Yeah, we got a few.
But my commander did, in fact, tell me to get a gun, and specifically from you. So if you could, you know, just hand that over, that'd be great.
Kind of sounds like you wanted nunchucks. You kind of brought it up there unsolicited. I only mentioned swords and scythes. And we're out of guns. We gave the first round of dudes guns. They've already gone out there, and they've already been ruthlessly murdered in cold blood by the woman. So we only have swords and scythes. Do you want two swords or a sword and a scythe? What do you want? You want a mix? What are you into?
Yeah, go ahead and give me a mix. That's great.
Okay.
And the nunchucks would be great. I mean, if you must have them. I mean, right?
Yeah.
You called attention to the fact that I said I wanted them.
Yeah, we're trying to get rid of them. Nobody likes them. If you want,
oh man, I'm gonna look so cool.
You just have like 8 sets of nunchucks just tied to each other, just a jump rope,
or like they're hanging. They're in various nunchuck shaped pockets, like ready to be used. But really, when I walk, all you hear is just the chain, like clishing, clishing, clishing. Oh man, I'm gonna mill so much corn with those nunchucks. That's what they're used for.
Has that ever heard?
I don't know. That's what I've heard.
Was that your pussy broom cocaine moment of the episode there? Did we hit it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, good.
After murdering a bunch of dumb melee weapon soldiers, Laura, but they looked cool. Again, once all stressed, they looked very cool.
One's out there in the distance just practicing with the nunchucks, not even aware of Laura approaching.
There's just a sea of like 7-year-old boys watching in awe, you know. After murdering a bunch of those dumb heroes to the 7-year-old boys who are now going to be scarred for life after seeing their heroes murdered, Laura scales along the outer side of the train to duck out of view of a passing helicopter, presumably the same one from earlier that has Von Croy on board. Ducking back now inside the train, it's apparent the mercenaries are evolving, and a few are even packing Uzis now.
Huh.
See? I knew we had guns.
Man, I guess those guys survived. That first wave was just hiding better. Interesting.
Oh, I'm so mad. I'm just going to throw these nunchucks on the ground and stomp on them like a cartoon hat in an old-timey cartoon.
Get me!
Vehicles begin racing alongside them. Vehicles, god damn it. Because it's funny because like that sound, even if I hadn't said like jumping on a hat in a cartoon hat with dust plumes all billowing up, just the sound of yeah, damn it, it immediately puts that in my head. Like everyone knows exactly what that image is.
Yeah.
Vehicles begin racing alongside the train and more goons launch themselves onto the sides of the speeding vessel. It seems as though the fight might never end, but the train has to be going somewhere, hopefully to Alexandria. She's hoping that there she can locate Jean-Yves, the man from the cabin before, to update him on her situation. Sure enough, the train stops in Alexandria, and Lara hops off to inspect the area just outside the depot. To her astonishment, the city, at least this part of it, appears to be a ghost town, except for the henchmen who occupy just about every building with their swords at the ready. She even pokes her head in the library and murders a guy there. Alrighty.
Anybody in here?
Yeah, just be.
Oh, man. Poor guy.
Then she makes her way up some stairs to find Jean-Yves in his study, who's completely unaware that just feet away, Laura had murdered several dangerous men who would happily like to see both of them dead.
Yeah. I imagine him with his noise-canceling headphones on, listening to Gangster Up.
Y'all gonna make me lose my mind.
And bobbing his head. And like ever so often, there's a gunshot in the background. He kind of looks up for a second. And he just reckons it's part of the song. And he's like, you know, he's gonna find you some old man fishing. And just keeps rocking out the DMX, completely unaware there's a massacre going on just right outside his door.
She tells him Von Croy has the amulet. And Jean confirms that this is bad news, but optimistically mentions that without the armor of Horus, Von Croy can do very little. At this point, Lara finally shows some weakness. As Jean says there's still time to prepare to take on Set, she tells him that she's tired and she needs a break.
unrelenting. Jean says she can retire after this, but for now, they have to move swiftly. He tells her Cleopatra obtained some of those pieces long ago, and they were scattered about the catacombs beneath Alexandria. He also tells her that Von Croy is aware of this and has already sent his men in on digs, to which Lara welcomes the challenge of destroying them. She begins to head off toward the catacombs, and Jean wishes her good luck, and she replies, "I make my own luck," whatever that means. He tells her to come back if she needs more information, which she soon does after searching the town for more ammunition and first aid. When she returns, he has new information already, telling her that he believes some of the armor could actually be in this very town because a local collector had it. Of course, that guy mysteriously disappeared. This could be a lead for Lara if Von Croy hasn't gotten to it first.
Interesting choice of words there, Lara. She makes her own luck because she's shooting dozens of unarmed men. It's kind of easy to... You know, it's pretty lucky you were armed and they weren't, huh? Pretty lucky.
those are good odds, Lara. Lara makes her way to the now-closed exhibition of the Collector. The exhibition is actually a part of some existing ruins, with the ruins used as the backdrop for an ancient-themed carnival. Once inside, she comes to a magic mirror that allows her to see things in the room that she cannot see unless they're in the mirror. Luckily, in that mirror, she spies a crossbow and takes it with her, and soon has to use the crossbow to shoot some targets that open a trap door. The exhibition area is a change of pace from Lara's typical trials and tribulations with these puzzles and mini-games evading the consequences of death that typically come with Lara's adventures. Plus, I think she won a big stuffed bear once. In one instance, Lara has to get crafty by combining a pole she found with a hook she found to fabricate a tool that will allow her to fetch some keys through a set of iron bars for opening a door. Now, see, in the carnival world, we call that cheating. Come on. It seems as though this collector was much better at hiding keys away from would-be intruders than Area 51 or any of the other secure locations Lara has visited in these episodes. Based on information from Jean, she needs to locate the hidden library, which may provide information on how to get to Cleopatra's hidden palace.
So it's a hidden library that possesses the information necessary to find a hidden palace, which possesses the link for the hidden armor of Horus. But all the keys will just be laying around on the ground somewhere, which kind of reminds me of how I used to hide pot. I'm like, okay, I'm going to hide it in my pillowcase and then hide my pillowcase somewhere on my dad. He'll never find it. Doesn't make any sense.
Now I just get the image of you like stuffing the pillow up your dad's shirt when he's sleeping.
Exactly.
Venturing further through the ruins, Lara detects a new enemy afoot. In the broad daylight of the outdoor coastal ruins are skeleton warriors carrying swords and shields, deftly leaping from pillar to pillar, stalking Lara as she approaches. She quickly learns that they are invincible to her gunfire, so she must get creative and find ways to trap them or send them falling to their death into spike pits.
Yeah.
But that's not the only thing around here that doesn't honor gunfire as a legitimate method of harm. There are ghosts.
Oh.
At one point, while trying to solve an ancient riddle in the catacombs, which requires Lara to throw her weight at some stone pillars to move them around into a specific formation, a glowing white wisp flies out from somewhere unseen and chases Lara. She fires on it, learning what we know now, that bullets do nothing to spectral beings. As she flees in terror, more spectral beings emerge and chase after her. And this is where Lara's knowledge of all things ancient, including its folklore, once again sets her apart from the regular adventurer. She spies a cross, somewhat makeshift, sticking up and out of the dirt and crumbled rock that make up the floors in this place. Still running, when she sees it, she dashes toward it and kneels at its base. The ghosts, officially known as air wraiths, dissipate and leave her alone.
Interesting that ghosts would just honor ghost tag like that. They're like, get her. Oh, she's on base. Damn it.
They're team players. They're not monsters. Come on.
It's true.
Lara soon re-encounters the pesky skeleton warriors who care little of her gunfire. But Lara finds a crossbow with exploding ammunition that makes quick work of these boners if she lands a headshot. If she does not take their heads off, they always manage to reanimate after being knocked out. She gets to the point where anytime she encounters a skeleton lying on the ground, she assumes it will reanimate, so she spends a good amount of time in the catacombs, walking room to room exploding the heads off of the seemingly still and resting dead, for fear that they could at any moment rise to their feet and chase her. And sometimes, even without heads, they still rise, but are a little bit more clumsy.
And then she wonders why the ghosts are pissed at her. She's just walking around blowing all the skeletons' heads off. I mean, come on. Put two and two together, Laura. You're smart.
The bowels of the catacombs are connected to a separate temple, this one called the Temple of Poseidon. The chambers of the temple are themselves interconnected with water-filled channels. So far on her journey, she has collected some trident pieces, in fact, the pointy part that goes on the end. These come in handy as Laura can manipulate the water channels by locating a statue of Poseidon, climbing the body of the statue, and then awkwardly mounting Poseidon's face while affixing the end piece of the trident she has found back to the statue. She has to repeat this process on a few different statues she comes across. Putting the trident back together changes the flow or behavior of the water, granting Laura access to some other parts of the temple.
Of all the statues that in this series are, you know, most of them just seem to reanimate, the ones she face mounts, they just lay there cold and dead as every corpse Laura's created. That's a real shame for those guys.
Be quite a different game if they did get reanimated.
Would be, yeah.
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 Eventually, she enters the long-lost Library of Alexandria, once known as the greatest repository of knowledge in the ancient world. It was founded in the 3rd century BCE and was later destroyed, although theories of how and by whom are plentiful. In reality, it just fell to ruin over the years, but theories abound that there is a lost version somewhere out there, out of sight, and here, Laura has found it. For a library, it is void of literature and instead is filled with contraptions with themes of astronomy, physics, sorcery, and music. It's a very large area, each section larger and more intricate than the last.
I like to think it was hidden this whole time because people were confused that they were calling it a library when it's clearly a hands-on museum. They're like, well, that one doesn't have any books, so that's definitely not a library. So let's stop pretending like it could be. And let's look for something else that's more library-esque with books inside of it.
We don't got a library, but we do got this big room over here with all these contraptions, with astronomy, physics, music, and for some reason, sorcery?
That ain't it.
Are you sure? All right.
Not
man.
It, man.
All right, keep moving on,
yeah,
I guess.
Got to have a book in it, at least one.
Here, Laura encounters a new enemy called a horseman. Although there is only one encounter where he is atop a horse, the other times a horseman is encountered, they are simply walking and come at Laura like an ancient axe-wielding Terminator.
Nice.
They are bronze statues that have come to life, and they are extremely difficult for Laura to defeat due to the head-to-toe bronze armor that protects them, of course. They are also fairly adept at maneuvering despite the weight and rigidity of bronze armor, but they do have a weakness.
You know, I bet it's not chocolate or romantic comedies, is it?
It's not. No, this is a video game. So its weakness is, of course, a giant crystal in the center of its chest that's glowing.
I'll be damned.
Laura must shoot the crystal in order to defeat these relentless foes who continually rush at Laura. When the horseman atop the horse is encountered, he is an even tougher opponent. He must be knocked from the horse and is holding a shield to his right, so Laura has to place herself to the left of the horseman to get a good shot. Engagements with the horseman require a lot of song and dance, but as Laura is adept at doing, she unloads her guns until they're vanquished before moving on.
But what happened to the horse?
Ah, yes. The stable owner is in for a hell of a tale.
For sure. Young sire, you've returned here to my stables and your trusty steed. What on earth has happened to your horse?
Oh, you'll never guess, okay? So I
Do you want me to try?
Horse. You could give it a go.
Did you feed it some hemlock? That's happened before.
That depends. Does that make the horse run off and not be dead? Is that what hemlock does?
No. It'll
okay. Didn't eat hemlock. No.
It'll
no.
kill the shit out of a horse. You didn't kill your horse, did you? You just lost it, right?
No. Did I kill the horse? No. I know it's fine. It's fine. The last I saw the horse, it was quite happy. It actually told me a very funny joke, and we all know that horses lose their sense of humor when they're at death's bed. So, old trusty Filbert was a great steed and was very happy.
You killed the horse, didn't you? You've killed it.
I might have killed it, yes.
God damn it. I loved Filbert.
Well, he hated you. He told me in his sleep.
That's just the worst cry I could come up with for a British man.
That one felt like there was a lot of snot that was coming, but it just couldn't come.
Yeah.
Here's the point where we remind you why Lara is doing any of this. She needs two items in order to access the Temple of Isis. She needs the Pharaoh's Knot, an artifact in the Hall of Demetrius, which she has just entered through the ancient library. The other item is the Pharaoh's Pillar that she picked up on her way through the library. Using these items, she'll enter the Temple of Isis, which leads to Cleopatra's hidden palace, where the armor of Horus is believed to rest. All of this in the hopes that Von Croy's desert warriors haven't gotten to it first.
I just imagine somewhere Von Croy's desert warriors are drawing things out in the sand, telling each other like, okay, so let me get this right. Everybody get in here, get in here, get in here, get in here. Mm-hmm. Get in close. Mm-hmm. Randy?
Okay.
You're not paying attention. Get in here close, get in here close. All right. We have to get the Pharaoh's Knot. Everybody with me so far? Gotta get the mm-hmm. knot. And mm-hmm. then the Pharaoh's Pillar in the library. Mm-hmm. That'll get us to the Temple of Isis. Right? With me so far. Mm-hmm. That will lead to Cleopatra's hidden palace. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we can get to the armor of Horus. We have to do all mm-hmm. that before Lara gets it. We have to do all that before mm-hmm. Lara gets it, okay? And then all of this, and then Von Croy mm-hmm. can finally just destroy the world and then us with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wait, what? What was that last part, sir?
Oh, let me just scratch that part out of the sand here. Okay, there you go. Yeah.
Ah, okay, I got it. Let's go.
Team on three. Let's get a team on three.
What's our team name?
Von Croy.
That's a very unimaginative name.
Well, you put me
Although
on the spot.
He's an egotistical bastard, so I guess it makes sense he would force his team to be called his own name. Inside the halls of Demetrius, Lara pockets the Pharaoh's Knot, and then she notices scrolls scattered on the floor. She picks one up and begins to read from it. It says, quote, "The tablet was returned to the sands that spawned it, beneath the citadel of Saladin in ancient Cairo, foretelling the time in the distant millennia when the stars of Orion come together. The ceremony is performed and Set entombed," end quote.
Hmm. Okay.
This is a clue for where Set is entombed, but before Lara can ponder that, a shadow falls over the doorway. It's Von Croy and three of his men.
Dum dum dum.
Hello, my dear. Another unannounced visit. I see you have found the scroll we unearthed. Interesting reading, yeah?
Only interesting if you know what it refers to.
Yes, yes, quite correct, my dear. The armor on its own is no more than a curiosity. But with the amulet and the ceremonial tablet, it becomes an important historical artifact, predating the Bible by centuries.
There is more at stake here than the sum of the pieces, Von Croy. Ever heard of Armageddon? Unpleasant, even by your standards.
Rebinding the spirit of Set, putting the armor on the statue at midnight at the turn of the millennium, so on and such like. I was never a believer in this magical hocus-pocus. Fools, after her!
Lara then flees and Von Croy's assassins fire on her, but she leaps over a ledge and dodges their shots. Von Croy creeps back out of the hidden door he entered through and leaves his men to deal with Lara. She manages to escape by finding a hidden door that releases her back to the coastal ruins near the town where she spoke with Jean and adjacent to the underwater cave entrance to where the Temple of Isis is hidden and waiting for the two pharaoh's artifacts to be placed so she can enter Cleopatra's palaces.
Gotta love that conveniently placed exit door in elaborate caverns and ruins that spit you back out at the entrance. Once again, ancient contractors don't get enough credit for those engineering feats.
In swimming toward the underwater temple, Lara is greeted by a hammerhead shark that swims past her, reminding us that it's not just strange reanimated statues and skeletons lurking about, but the wildlife is still of the belief that Lara should not be alive. Mm. She decides to spare this hammerhead and swims quickly through the door in the hopes of discovering oxygen on the other side. Once inside, she places the artifacts in their respective receptacles. Respective receptacles. Say that five times fast.
Respective receptacles. Respectful testicles. Respect. Fuck, I can't do it, man.
You got one and a half, though. That's pretty good.
Thanks.
She then ascends up the temple and into Cleopatra's palace. It's a beautiful sight, contrasting greatly with some of the other areas Lara's visited. There's ivy throughout, a crystal clear pond with a working fountain in the center, and ancient art adorning the walls, still as vibrant as the day it was put there. Huh. A palace completely untainted by the passing of time.
But where is the armor of Horus? Lara searches. Upon her search, she discovers she must use 4 fist-sized beetle emblems as keys. She locates them in recesses in the wall and attempts to pry them out with her crowbar as she comes across them. To her surprise, once they are removed, a swarm of the living version of the beetles, scarabs to be exact, flow out of the hole and overtake her. She has to endure this 4 times, all the while being chased by a fleet of the scurrying critters on the ground, who are excited perhaps to gnaw on the first flesh-possessing being they have seen in quite some time.
Oh, I bet Lara was excited to meet the beetles.
So she's just trying to pry these tops off. Like,
I need to pop off this scarab so that I can pop. Oh, there we go.
Oh, hello there. I'm Paul. What? Paul McCartney. What's your name, young lady?
Oh my God! It's Sir Paul McCartney.
The one and only.
I'm so honored, and frankly, I'm surprised to find you here.
You're telling me. Say, have you seen John?
No, but maybe let me pop this one open. There we go.
Oh yeah. Wow, hello. Could you even imagine we'd be down here as beetles?
I'm quite scared, John. I want to hold your hand.
Oh, Paul, you act like you've been down here forever.
Well, John, I do feel like I've been down here since yesterday.
All right. Well, now let's go find Ringo and George.
She uses these beetle keys to obtain a golden wind-up beetle that she can place on the floor in certain points to run ahead and trigger traps that would have killed Lara had she gone first. It's quite the gimmick for the ancients to employ as a means of security, but somehow Lara is wise enough to figure it out instead of dying. That's not as strange as it is, perhaps overly contrived. However, things do quickly get weird a short while later. In one room in the massive palace are 2 pedestals fit for standing on. Lara, curious, walks over to one and stands, and a swirling beam of golden light encircles her in a spiral, and across from her, on the other pedestal, a clone of her emerges. It's in the shape of Lara, but appears less living and more synthetic. Lara steps off and slowly approaches it, curiously. This synthetic version of Lara doesn't seem to do a whole lot, so the real Lara moves on into the throne room and inquisitively takes a seat on the chair to take in the view an ancient royal must have once enjoyed. As soon as she does, a hidden door in the room opens and a guard walks in. But not just any guard. This is a Cleopatra guard, clad in an Egyptian headdress reminiscent of Set, carrying a giant scepter and standing over 6.5 feet tall relative to Lara. Soon after the first one imposes one side of the room, another door opens and a second steps in. Behind these demigods are the 2 pieces of the armor of Horus that Lara has been trying to locate. She can sneak by them to grab the armor and leave, or she can engage them in a long, arduous, bullet-laden battle to the death while they fire harmful rays from their scepters at her. Being Lara, she chooses the latter.
Of course.
After she puts them both back into their hopefully eternal slumber, she collects the armor and leaves the palace and heads back to Alexandria to meet with Jean.
Maybe, you know, we're 4 games in. Maybe she's obligated to use some guns now.
Yeah, that would explain why she decides to shoot them and not escape around them. She must be like sponsored by a gun company or something.
Yeah, well, let's hope she had negotiated that contract well.
I have to kill like how many men for the first 6 months and then how many men every month after to maintain my salary here?
Let me just check the table here, ma'am. Let me see me scroll down here. It looks like, okay, so you're on our second tier plan. You have to kill 400 men in the first 6 months, and then you get to kill 25 men every month after that for 6 months. Then we'll renew your contract if you hit all of those notches there on the old gun belt. That's what we like to say around here.
Yes. Well, it's very funny. That's one of the reasons I chose this very strange agency to handle all of my gun-killing contracts. I love a good witty joke. Are there any penalties for early murdering? Like, should I, let's say hypothetically, okay, have a good number of side missions, DLC packs, new games coming forth? If I were to kill more than 400 men in the first 6 months, could I maybe is there a penalty for that?
Well, what we're really, I mean, we're getting a lot of pressure from the government on a lot of this stuff. And, of course, you know, You got, what, Joe Lieberman and his wife, and Al Gore, Tipper Gore, she's mean about it, and we... Basically, what you have to do is protract it. It's going to be like a kill per minute kind of deal. All right? So you can't you can't just kill. You can't just first chapter of the game. You can't just walk in there and just murder a whole city. Okay? That don't count. We take, you know, for every 100 murdered a second, we kind of count those as one. Okay? So basically, you have to protract it over several hours and push a bunch of blocks and do a bunch of other boring bullshit forever. You understand that?
Lara, I'm still going. Lara arrives back at Jean's study in the middle of the night, but her friend is nowhere to be seen, and the place appears ransacked. She finds a note stuck to the wall with a dagger, and it reads,
"Congratulations, you survived to fight another day. I trust that you now have all the armor. Jean-Yves shall be escorting us to Cairo, not entirely of his own free will, I admit. A simple trade, his life for the armor of Horus. Do not take too long thinking it over."
In the next scene, Lara is seen speeding out of the city on Jean's motorcycle, and there's a cut to a trio of military-grade helicopters flying over the desert, and then, suddenly, through a swarm of locusts. Back on the ground, we see Von Croy in his classic 1950s car speeding across the desert in a platoon of other vehicles when the same locust swarm engulfs his car and the vehicles around him. The locusts black out the sky as the vehicle continues moving quickly over the sandy desert highway. The sun rises and the locusts disappear. The camera zooms in behind the wheel of the car to show Von Croy, who no longer looks himself, his eyes glow yellow, his demeanor decidedly more evil. A brief image of Set is superimposed on Von Croy, giving a glimpse of Von Croy's true self. When Lara reaches the walls of Cairo, she sees a burning helicopter out front, and it appears the city has befallen a recent plague. A few locusts scatter into the sky behind her.
Looks like someone invited the plague bringer. I warned y'all.
Once through the walls, Lara is sprayed with fire from sentry guns. They spray the wide area, making it difficult for Lara to go anywhere. Pinned down, she relies on her laser sight that she can attach to any of her weapons to give her the accuracy she needs from long range at night to take them out. Why is this place so heavily guarded and with modern weaponry? She moves on as everything here seems dilapidated or empty, so she hops back on the motorcycle for a quick spin around the block and finds some desert warriors and Egyptian soldiers lurking about. Thankfully, this motorbike, it's one of those ones with a passenger car, which makes for a wide enough vehicle suited for running over humans with little consequence. In a sequence that only makes sense in Tomb Raider's architecture, Lara is trying to make her way across some rooftops in the city where she happens upon the downed locust-swarmed helicopter we encountered earlier. Hmm. The helicopter blocks her path. However, it just so happens that a red, glowing container full of explosive liquid lay beside it, very visible in the dark night, reminiscent of Resident Evil 2. Lara explodes the container, which destroys the helicopter so that she can proceed through.
Yeah, how did that container get left on the roof and then also not explode when the helicopter crashed, like, feet from it?
I'm going to guess laziness, irresponsibility, maybe magic. Probably horse shit. Finally, she comes to the chambers of Tulun, a real mosque in Cairo that is both the largest and oldest, as it was built in the 9th century AD.
Hmm.
It doesn't take long for Lara to explore the extent of the mosque before running into something there that is ruthless and not happy with her presence.
Finally, the ghost of Jesus Christ.
Close! The Tor demigod.
Oh, I was close.
What is that, you ask? The Tor demigod is an enormous, possibly 13-foot-tall minotaur with quite the attitude. It wields a large hammer and marches toward her, as many things have done before, stoically, like the Terminator. She fires on it and realizes in no time that is a futile move. She'll have to get creative. Each time he crashes his hammer to the ground, it sends a shockwave outward that causes Lara to trip, allowing him to come closer. She reckons the only way to get rid of it is to trap it inside the mosque.
Huh?
Which is weird, because I thought getting trapped by the church is more of a Scientology move.
Where is Shelley Miss Cabbage? Where is she?
In one of these sarcophaguses in a Tomb Raider game. She traps the Minotaur by luring him inside and quickly getting around to shut the door.
She hurriedly gets back on the motorbike to speed away in case another invincible Minotaur is lurking nearby.
You don't want two of them, for sure.
She reaches the Citadel Gate in Cairo in search of Jean and sees a wounded Egyptian soldier sitting down and leaning against a wall. His blood-covered chest indicates that he's severely wounded.
Or he could just be so stuffed after devouring all that raw Minotaur corpse.
He turns to talk to her and is confused by what had happened to him and his men.
What in God's name has happened here? Where are the rest of my men?
I banged into a couple of them. They appear to have sealed off all the exits.
Yes. Yes, this is good. You must help us to liberate the city.
I'm just here for directions. I need a route to the Citadel.
This is not so good. This is where the main activity takes place.
Activity?
We encountered it as the skies began to darken. A creature from our ancient past. It tore through my men like a firestorm. I managed to station our ammunition truck before the beast with a mind to igniting the explosive device in the rear. But with renewed vigor, it forced us back. It was as if it knew of our plans.
Beast or no beast, Sarge, I've got to get into that building.
You have spirit. Perhaps as we retreated, we have mined some of the streets to prevent contamination. Two of my men are still in the area, out by the northern cemetery. One of them holds the frequency for the mine detector. The other holds the second half of the code for the explosive device.
And if I find them?
Tell them Sergeant Aziza sent you. I heard your motorbike. Once you have the codes, take me on it to the ammunition truck. I shall eradicate the blockage. But Harik, I am not long of this world.
So Lara quickly starts moving on foot, but not long after is greeted by the creature that likely took Aziza's men by surprise. A dragon-esque monster formerly called the Creature from the Past. It's impervious to bullets as far as Lara knows. Only its head is visible as it cranes its long neck over the ledge of the building it sits atop. Its enormous and terrifying head leaves her little room to run as it writhes and screeches. Lara flees past it and enters a nearby cathedral, hoping to find a way to defeat the beast and catch her breath. All she finds is a nitrous oxide canister, and so takes it back with her on her way back past Aziza, still lying against the wall. He gives Lara a pep talk and tells her to affix the canister to her bike because it will need extra power to get where she's going.
Nice. I like how she just knows how to just put a canister on a bike, make it go faster. And he's just sitting there giving her pep talks as she keeps running past him. It's so funny.
I think he does that for, I think he does that to a lot of people who just run past. Like, he's just sitting there waiting. And he's like, okay, oh, okay, here comes someone. Here comes someone. Okay. Hey, keep reaching for the stars. Oh, they're gone. Okay. Okay, no, here we go. Hey, never give up on your dreams. Oh, okay, that's fine. Well, next time we'll catch up later. Okay, so I gotta make this one shorter. Okay, so that they can hear it. Okay, oh, here comes it. Oh, hey, hang in there. I think they got that one. I think they heard that one. Oh man, this is good. I think I really spoke to that person. They're really, oh god, there goes another one.
He's just sitting there bleeding out. He's like, this hurts, but I'm having a little bit of fun.
Hey, I shouldn't die in vain. I should help other people as I'm dying.
Yeah, I feel like he should be asking for help instead of giving pep talks, but, you know, it's his life.
He gives help. He doesn't ask for it.
It's true. Nobleman.
When Lara reaches her bike, she finds another of the giant hammer-wielding Minotaurs guarding it. She knows it's invincible and runs around. I might have said invisible a bunch of times earlier. Damn it. I hope not. Oh, well. Too late now. She knows it's invincible and runs around it to hop on her bike and speed away. She's looking for a way to blow up the creature from the past, but her way is now blocked by mines. She takes a detour to deal with military turrets staged and ready to shoot anyone who trespasses. She comes across another wounded soldier bleeding out and pleads with him to give her what she needs. He hands her the detonator but tells her the codes were with another soldier named Saida across the roof bridge and somewhere in a mosque. He goes on to say that Saida's head had been eaten from his body by the strange creature, and that Lara will have to search his body for the codes.
Ooh, let's hope he didn't just memorize them, you know? Yikes.
Lara speeds back to Aziza, stopping along the way to place the detonator that she needs the codes to trigger. She gets back to Aziza and puts him on her bike. Across from where the creature's head is visible just out of reach is a truck parked in a garage. Laura parks her bike there and asks Aziza if he has the codes. He doesn't give a straight answer, but it's assumed he has them. He tells her it's best to use the truck as a kamikaze mission to blow up the monster. He slowly stands, stumbles to the truck, climbs in and starts it, and speeds it off the ramp into the face of the creature, exploding it and causing its viscera to spray all over Laura.
Ew.
Its head now lays slumped on the ground, its tongue dangling lifelessly from its mouth.
I think the guy just knew that Laura was going to shoot him anyway. He's read the reports. He's like, nah, I'll just kill myself in this truck.
That explained why he was like so willing to pep her up and make her like see life differently earlier. In the next scene, Laura has found Jean. He is tied to a pillar in the Citadel, unguarded. Upon seeing Laura, he exclaims that Von Croy is possessed by Set. He's seen it with his own eyes. He tells her that Von Croy is digging under the Citadel into the Crusaders' vaults in search of the ceremonial tablet. The tablet contains Set's binding incantations. He hugs Laura, pleading for her to be careful because he fears there are things in the vault that man was not meant to see. Laura replies, I'm not a man, and I'm always careful.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. That was very, very important for you to say. That was good. And who leaves a hostage unguarded in this scenario? I mean, come on. She just walks on in. What's the point of having a hostage if you're not going to poke them?
Advance the plot,
I guess.
That's it. We then cut to Von Croy with Set's glowing eyes, crouching on the ground, brushing the dirt away from a stone tablet. He then uses the Amulet of Horus to open a nearby door, and with his newly gained powers, reanimates the skeletons of two ancient holy crusaders. Back in the Citadel, Laura must explore it like she has any ancient ruin she's ventured into before, except now she unknowingly has undead crusaders undermining and sabotaging her efforts. Her mission now is to locate Von Croy, who is somewhere in the depths of the Citadel digging up the binding incantations to summon Set. Laura needs to stop him. She briefly crosses paths with the zombie Holy Knight crusaders who stumble along with their heavy swords and shields, their faces darkened by their hooded robes, and their glowing red eyes emitting their evil. They are unwavering. Laura runs to avoid them, but can hear their swords dragging along in the distance, always getting louder when she stops to survey an area. Remember, Laura is far underground in the mines beneath the Citadel where Von Croy's men are digging in the search of the armor of Horus, so it is very dark. Eventually, Laura meets a once familiar face, Von Croy. He appears to have transformed nearly completely into a zombie. His skin with a greenish tint, his eyes as red as the Crusaders, his cheeks sunken in. He's only recognizable from his hat and suit that he always wears.
It could be Roger Stone, though. We don't know. He has the hat and the cane and the glasses and all the other stuff.
In the general milieu of evil.
Yeah. We don't know. I think jury's still out. She's like, Werner? Roger? Just seeing which one would answer.
I want to see this brought up into Roger Stone's actual case. Now, Exhibit A, Tomb Raider 4. Now you can see.
They come face to face in the mines, and Von Croy, through a seething whisper, says,
Come in, Laura. I have been expecting you. Come see me, child. Do not fear your old colleague. I merely require the armor that you hold in your possession.
Laura asks what she'll get in return, to which Von Croy responds,
We'll grant you vigor. As those around you fall,
he's clearly improvising,
you shall command the ultimate power, that of life or death, over those you choose at your side, and in return, they will bow at your feet and give worship. How'd I do?
Laura doesn't bite on that and backs away slowly from Von Croy and his pack of Dobermans he has at his side. She grabs the Amulet of Horus from its receptacle, causing a door to drop between them and sealing Von Croy in the mine. She flees and exits the Citadel and Cairo altogether.
He's standing on the other side of... he did that to her earlier. You'd think he'd see that shit coming, right? He'd be like, all right, she's kind of got the power play here. She's on the side with the key. If she pulls it out, I'm locked in here forever. Just play it cool. Play it cool. Ah, shit, she did it. She did the thing.
I don't think he really learns much through his endeavors, because his sort of improv'd offer there really isn't that enticing. I mean, Laura has had the whole command the power of life and death thing for this entire video game series. Who lives and who dies has really been completely up to her this whole time. All Von Croy really offers here is that, like, worshippers will bow at her feet, which, considering how nomadic Laura is, having people always at her feet would get logistically very difficult, what with sure. having to purchase multiple plane tickets and train yeah. seats every time she wants to hop to a new continent.
Yeah, those single-seat snowmobiles that she seems to just keep finding throughout the first three games aren't going to be sufficient for a herd of worshippers. Although it is worth a shot. I'm not saying don't try it. I'm just...
Right. He's in a bit of a bind. He yeah. should at least say something. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's now in the pyramid complex in Giza and needs to get beneath the Sphinx with the amulet of Horus to reverse what she set in motion with Set. She finds a monument near the Sphinx and reads the inscription. What it says isn't immediately relevant, but it convinces Lara that this is the right place. She digs, finding a hatch that takes her into an area beneath the Sphinx. Once inside, she's greeted by more of the Sphinx bulls that she's able to trick into locking themselves into different rooms. There's a shrine in the center with three tablets, each with a different hieroglyphic on it. Each time they are pressed in a different order, a different door in the complex opens, and Lara has to go find which one it was. Most of what Laura has to deal with here is tight corridors that she has to crawl through on her hands and knees, and the occasional bat coming down to say hi, and large pitfalls she has to leap over. It's really rather uneventful and requires a handful of artifacts to be found from scattered areas and placed in the correct receptacle to open the exit onward into a chamber where the holy scriptures are kept. Basic Tomb Raider-y stuff. These scriptures are needed for when, and perhaps if, Laura gets to the pedestal for placing the armor of Horus. Now, with the scrolls, she ventures back outside the Sphinx complex and needs to gain access to Menkaure's pyramid, which she must do while dodging large excavation pits. To enter it, she must climb along the side of the entrance, a daring task that doesn't sound so bad, except for the Volkswagen-sized scorpions that litter her path.
Large note, big old note.
Laura doesn't think twice and uses the exploding crossbow ammo to eviscerate those nightmares from the earth. Mm-hmm. At some point, she enters a building off to the side after hearing screaming. Inside, a scorpion is gripping a man in one of its giant red claws and is shaking him. She fires on it, hoping to save the man. Eventually, the scorpion gives up and flings the man off the wall in a final fit before it goes down. The man, clearly in pain, is thankful to Laura for saving him and praises Allah in the process. He gives her his keys for the Pyramid of Menkaure and tells her she'll be safe there from these abominations.
You know it's serious when someone in the Tomb Raider universe gives up their keys. You know how fucking hard it is to get keys around here? It's insane. That guy probably had to push 32 blocks, pull 15 fucking levers, and align four hieroglyphics on a fish or something. You knew it was serious.
Laura runs toward the pyramid. The sky is now darkened, a lightning storm with dark clouds swirl over a blood-red sky. A giant flying scarab descends on her, and she picks it off with a crossbow and continues upward. This is starting to feel and look like hell. She reaches a landing on the side of the pyramid with a door and is able to use the guard's keys to open it. It's not long before Laura realizes this place is not as safe as the guard let on before lending his keys. The place is full of stiff, upright walking mummies. It seems everything ancient and dead has returned to life in this place. She makes it through, merely using the pyramid as a shortcut and a way to bypass the scorpions, and exits the other side.
Yes, and then comes my favorite part in this entire series, the most illogical leap of anything ever illogical. She finds a button exposed on the side of a pyramid, and she presses it, and the top of a neighboring pyramid just fucking disappears. It just sinks in on itself. Then she goes over there to that pyramid and just goes down in it. But think about that button. It's been exposed on the side of this pyramid for thousands of years that anyone could just press. You and I could have gone to Cairo, visited the pyramids, and gotten off, you know, the tour and be like, what's this button do? And pushed it and just fucking destroyed a pyramid. I can't believe it. I can't believe a button that that's just been there for thousands of years hasn't been pressed not once. And it does all that. It blew my mind when I saw it.
Now, think about it this way. Maybe there were several more pyramids at one time. People blew those up, you know, and finally they got wise to it. They're like, we should probably stop pressing that button.
Bad button. We should actually put like some ropes around. It's like, no. It kind of throws off the feel of the ancients, you know? Just leave it exposed and just hope no one pushes it.
It's just yellow caution tape, but instead of saying the word caution, it's just a bunch of hieroglyphics.
Oh, it looks like I can get a fish square taco over here. Oh, I'll just push this button. Oh, look, a fish taco. Oh, that's not a fish taco.
All of this to get a key.
All right.
In the next area, Lara is back underground, trying to dodge the outside elements en route to the Great Pyramid. In doing so, she's faced with a series of rooms that are protected with lever-pulling puzzles and riddles. The big takeaway here is that Lara comes in contact with dozens of stray dogs that we might want to assume were rabid, because Lara shoots and kills each and every one of them on sight.
Yep.
Then, later, she comes to a series of monkey statues. One sees no evil, one speaks no evil, and one, wait for it, hears no evil.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
Using her...
Sorry.
You third monkey, you.
Sorry.
Using her crowbar as a lever, she activates them in order. The first two open a door where a monkey leaps out at Lara and she explodes each one of those with a shotgun blast to the head.
Aww.
The last one releases a monkey that leaps high up on a ledge and pulls a switch that opens a door for Lara. Aww. How long had these monkeys been waiting there for someone to attempt that riddle?
There's been a committee in charge of monkey training and swapping for thousands of years, just playing behind the scenes, just waiting for that payoff of one day somebody stumbling upon that riddle. And then Lara gets there and just shoots and kills two of the fucking monkeys. I mean, it's upsetting. I am upset. It is not okay.
To be fair, they leapt at her. That's pretty aggressive, right?
I mean, dodge. She dodges well, everything.
If you're training a monkey to solve this riddle for her, you can train it to not leap, right?
True. Yeah. That is a good point.
Fuck those monkeys, like I said.
You're right. It's the monkey's fault. I mean, you know, she has a reputation for monkeys not liking her. That was in the last episode. So maybe monkey word got around. And yeah, could be that.
Yep. The word made it through the jungle vine.
Yep, there it is. The ape vine.
Damn it. That's the one we use. Damn it. The door opens and Lara is now outside the Great Pyramid. But she's on the wrong side of it. She scales around the outside, but the storm is causing large stones from atop the pyramid to tumble down at Lara. Each stone easily weighs a ton or more and would erase Lara completely and quickly. She treads carefully, even having to deal with the return of large flying scarabs that try to feed on her when she pauses to let a boulder go by. Finally, she's inside the Great Pyramid and immediately ascends upward through a narrow ramped chamber to the very top. She inserts the four Great Pyramid keys she has collected along the way.
All right.
The keys result in a beam of blue light to emit from the center of the pyramid straight upward. Lara then descends back the way she came to get to the lower section where the light is coming from, which so happens to be the Temple of Horus.
We made it!
She descends down to find the armor of Horus suspended in the blue light emitting upward. She places the scriptures on the four pedestals surrounding it and enters the light and places the amulet of Horus on the armor. A cutscene shows the blue light transforming into a phoenix that races down toward the pyramid and into the armor with a force that launches Lara backward. The eyes of the armor's face mask turn red and it begins to move. Lara leaps into the water surrounding the platform. Meanwhile, Set, who has now become the armor, fires blasts of harmful green light at her. Lara tries to escape through a hatch in the ceiling, taking a few hits as she does that sear her skin. She shuts the hatch, snuffing out the beam, and exits the pyramid with the hopes that its collapse will wipe out Set and erase the evil that resides here.
Let's hope.
Back outside, it is morning. Lara is stumbling up the ramp out of the collapsing pyramid when a familiar silhouette steps in her way. It's Von Croy. Evident by the hat and cane.
Could be Roger Stone, though. We haven't. It could be still.
Laura's taken off guard, but Von Croy doesn't seem menacing. He motions her to come to him hurriedly. He tells her to hurry before the pyramid collapses on her, and at that moment it begins to quake. She yells over the crashing debris, "Are you back, Werner? No more Set?" He replies,
"No time for that, Lara. Your hand. Give me your hand." Which seems like he could have just said, "Yes. This is absolutely Werner." It's suspicious as hell. He's like, stand by and stand down. I don't ask right now.
I would argue his reply could be even shorter since both of her questions could be answered with the affirmative. Are you back?
Yeah.
No more Set?
Yeah. Yep. Uh-huh. Please hurry. No
time for me to say yes. Give me your, extend your hand upward to me for me to grab it to save you. There's no time to say yes or no.
By the time he's done, he just pulls her up and it's only her arm remaining. Deciding to trust him, Laura dashes up the ramp toward his outstretched hand. The collapse knocks the floor out from Laura, who now hangs on a ledge. Laura says, "Good to see you again, Werner." To which he says,
"I couldn't leave you."
One more quake, and Laura loses her grip and slips down, now sealed inside the pyramid under the collapsed rubble. Von Kroy gets to safety. He hangs his head and removes his hat, saddened by Laura's demise.
Oh, that's why it's her last revelation.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And that's the story of Tomb Raider 4, the last revelation, and our conclusion of this, the second season of Tales of the Lesser Medium.
Wow. I gotta be honest, I didn't see that ending coming.
Mm-mm. So that means, if logic means anything anymore, no more Tomb Raider games, right?
You would think. Well, I mean, I guess they don't show her dying, but it's heavily assumed. They could be one of those Gandalf moments where he just falls for 6 days and somehow survives. He just wears a different robe. They're like, nah, he's good. He's good. It's magic bullshit. So, I mean, Laura could maybe have the same fate. She comes back as Laura the White. She has a beard.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. And a lot of the other games, too, in the series, there's not really a whole lot of, like, continuation narratively. There's not a lot of cohesion. So, like, I know the reboots, they're all, like, one of them's a prequel before Laura is the Tomb Raider. One of them is, like, her first couple years as the Tomb Raider, and then one of them has flashbacks and kind of might fit within this timeline somewhere. So, maybe she is truly dead, and we're all just playing her reanimated corpse throughout the rest of these games, which I guess kind of makes sense. It fits in thematically to the whole Tomb Raider thing.
It is true, and I think this is, like, the wrap-up of this first arc. You know, it's like how they reiterate or they re-canonize Batman every few years because they find a new guy who can draw him cool and another guy who wants to write him cool. And they're like, let's bring Batman back. I think that's the case with Laura. I think she's dead here, and we just have to deal with it. And then they reboot her for some more adventures. But it was very interesting. I don't know narratively. I mean, gameplay wise, this one certainly had a lot more going for it. It was more, you know, the tombs weren't just empty places. They actually, there was like litter and debris around. It felt more like lived in. Mm-hmm. But narratively, it was just kind of a mess, man. It was hard to keep track of. She had to, you know, all of that contrived bullshit that they make you do. Like, you got to find a hat to go on the sphincter to find the rat in the shoe beside the, like, it's just all of the shit. And they don't really explain it to you. It's just stuff that Laura has to do. So kind of loses you there. It's hard to track. And it made this one a little more difficult to put together, I think. But we're
yeah,
done.
For
she's,
sure.
She's finally fucking dead. We can all celebrate that. So,
woo!
Laura's dead. Thank God. She killed too many people. She deserved it.
That's true. I would say she deserved it after the first several dozen. But we can wait till game four. Sure.
And all the wildlife she murdered, all the dogs. I mean, wow. Just a terrorist. Just a straight-up
single-handedly responsible for the extinction of several species.
That's right. That is true. I mean, she tried to kill dinosaurs off, like, so many times.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, the world has already agreed that dinosaurs are already dead.
Yeah.
So she's just really abiding by the historical record by killing those dinosaurs. But anyway, we're not talking about Tomb Raider 1, 2, 3, or 4 anymore.
we're done with it. Thank God. So, yeah, thank you, everyone, for dealing with all of that, sticking by through Laura and her pyramid adventures. But that has been... Oh, I guess I should ask, you know, did you have a favorite of the four? Did you have any favorite characters? We did a debrief last time. Do you have any favorite characters, favorite moments?
It's weird because this series is really... There is only one really... for lack of a better term, fleshed out character. I mean, she's not really that rounded or fleshed out or anything in these four games. All the other characters are kind of just side, like, archetypes. And so if there's a character I like, it has to be because they're so absurd and crazy. I actually kind of like this Werner Von Kroy a little bit because he's so blatantly a ripoff of the Indiana Jones Ark of the Covenant dude. I can't remember what his name was in that movie, but like it's literally him. And so they make no apologies for it. And so I feel like that this was finally Tomb Raider saying, other than the whole boulder scenes, that was more of an inspiration. This is like Tomb Raider saying,
yeah, we're just ripping you off.
Yeah, we're out of ideas. We're going to have to, yeah, basically, yeah. I enjoy Greg. Greg and the contractor were two of my favorite people to
Oh, I see. Characters we made up.
Well,
oh,
sure. God. I mean, either or. Yeah, either or. I mean, in terms of the game, I think the crazy guy that walked out of the tent drunk was one of my favorite, like, characters in the game. But in terms of our characters, yeah, I got to go with Greg or the contractor.
Yeah, it doesn't really change my mind either. all of our characters are the worst. No, I Greg's great. I like Greg. All of my characters kind of devolved into the same, either overly enthusiastic guy with a lisp or southern guy.
Those are all great characters, man. They all have a place. Yeah.
They none of them have names. They're just how described. That's what it's the guy who says this a lot. The guy who says this a lot.
Those are great. I like having those around. Yes. Well, all right. I guess that'll wrap it up. So thank you, everyone, once again for listening to these episodes. And that concludes the season of Tomb Raider. Please subscribe for future seasons. I think the next one will come out much sooner than this one did in relation to the first season that we did. So be excited for that. And expect a lesser sode sometime in the near future to split the difference.
Mm-hmm. And if you would be so kind, please rate and review us on your podcasteries of choice. iTunes is probably the most obvious one. Give that one a rate and review if you could. Otherwise, you know, talk about us on Twitter and share what you've experienced with all of your friends on Twitter. Let them know how good the show is and let us know what you think about it. You can reach the show itself at Tales Lesser on Twitter. You can reach myself at Caleb J. Ross, all one word, the letter J, not the word. And you can reach my co-host Travis at Trav Plays Games, also all one word, no underscores or anything like that.
None of that. None of those horseshit other characters. Yes, I agree. You can also send us an angry email about the way Caleb pronounced anything.
I went back to Laura this whole time.
Yeah, about some of you know, plenty of my jokes that didn't land or were just completely insensitive. So please reach out to us and very kindly point those things out to us at polykillpodcast@gmail.com. You can also head over to polykill.com. We got tons of other podcasts over there. If you somehow found this one without finding those, we have Polykill, which is about gaming, Drunk Friend, which is kind of about gaming, but we interview other people. Petey's Power Hour just joined on board, and it's about alcohol. So if you want to die of alcoholism, please check that one out. And Off Kilter, if you just want to be annoyed for about 45 minutes at a whack. So that's our canon right now. We might be adding more in the future. We'll see.
Wow, you can really sell it, can't you?
Yeah. And if you can hear that, if you hear that, yeah, that's at Brad Sucks. He don't suck, but that intro and outro theme was provided by him, and I love it. I love Brad Sucks, so please check him out on Spotify.
And thank you for listening, everyone.
And the tale has been told.